I'm Katie Clark, and this is The World. Commanders in charge of the current NATO operation in southern Afghanistan say it could take another 30 days to clear Taliban insurgents out of the town of Marja. It was the Taliban, you may recall, who harbored Osama bin Laden and refused to hand him over after the September 11th attacks. Ever since, the U.S. has been trying to get bin Laden. The al-Qaeda leader has eluded capture. But a trove of audio tapes that belonged to him was taken from bin Laden's home in Kandahar early in the war. Flag Miller is a religious studies professor at the University of California, Davis. He's been studying the tapes.
There's, you know, an amazing array of different kinds of recordings. Some of them are very amateur backroom conversations between top al-Qaeda leaders or recruits. Most of them are actually sermons and speeches from across the Islamic world. Some of them are bin Laden himself. There are over 23 tapes of him, none of which have been published before, all during the early years, late 80s and 90s, talking at various training camps to recruits, raising money for jihad. But most of the other tapes are things he was listening to in order to prepare himself to basically lead this movement in Kandahar.
So are they generally, do you view them as motivational tapes? I'm wondering why they were made and also who did the recording. Do you have any idea?
Again, a wide array of different reasons these were made. Some of them are simply sermons, in that sense motivational, but they're the kind of thing one might hear in any mosque. Some of them are about moral reform, about your soul. There are some speakers in the collection who are very moderate. They're, in fact, pro-West. Bin Laden was listening to them, too, you know, partly because he felt like, you know, they had something to say, but also to prepare himself for those who might be his critics. But there are also a lot of more militant speeches, sermons, and discussions. And those were recorded sometimes to have copies to pass around to people who might not have access to the internet or to the latest technologies. For example, at training camps and such, students would need these to study with. So they listen to audio tapes together.
Well, I would like to play a little bit of the huge volume of tapes that you have here. And one of them that struck me as really interesting is it seems to be a question and answer session that Osama bin Laden was conducting. Somebody had posed a question about the bombing of the USS Cole back in 2000, wondering what the impact was locally and internationally. Let's hear it. Again, that's Osama bin Laden talking about the impact of the bombing of the USS Cole back in 2000. Flag Miller, what is it that he's saying?
This is a wedding of one of his bodyguards. So these mujahideen, they're in Afghanistan, and bin Laden is invited to stand up, and he's asked some very sharp questions about politics and world affairs. And so he responds to this question about the Cole bombing, saying that, you know, this is a blessed operation, and basically the attack was against a great tyrant who is effectively the United States, and this tyrant has co-opted local rulers, Arabs and non-Arabs, and is threatening the entire region. In his view, you know, they're the greatest and most dangerous presence on the Arabian Peninsula. And what's interesting is as he gets into it, he talks about how the Western media in the United States is trying to kind of contain the effects of this attack. And one of the ways they're doing so is by studying the psychology of jihadis and studying how they think. And he kind of scorns that and sees it as a futile effort to try to bracket and contain kind of the mindset of the terrorist. And to his mind, it's ineffective because it doesn't come to terms with the dynamism of jihad, the ways in which militants live daily lives and, in fact, are far more complex individuals than the West would like to think of them.
What is it that you hear and learn about Osama bin Laden when you're listening to that you're not getting from other sources?
He has a vast knowledge of Arab history, of poetry, of stories about the past, and he can recruit all of those to illustrate his militant points, to kind of embellish his vision for worldwide global jihad, and situate these kind of grander visions in cultural memory. And he does so very effectively. He himself composes his own poetry. He cites others. He uses poetry to underscore his specific messages. In this case, it's a message about the glory of the strike against the USS Cole.
Like, I'd like to move on to another example. It almost sounds like a radio play in a sense. It starts off with the sound of some machine gun fire.
أبا عبد الرحمن إيدا إن خالد قد قتل في سبيل الله ومات شهيدا إن شاء الله.
Flag Miller, if you could explain to me what it was that we were just hearing, what is this?
This is a common example of a kind of militant anthems that are recorded on audio tapes, partly for propaganda purposes, but partly to allow listeners to really think through, like, what is battle like, and to kind of imagine themselves in these contexts of violence, of martyrdom, and to then have them as resources to equip themselves to talk about with others. This particular tape, called Come to Jihad, features some sounds of machine gun fire made in the studio somewhere. You know, it's almost kind of melodramatic. There's someone who dies, one hears his final breath, and then there is no God but God, says his colleague. Khalid has been killed. Calm yourself, Abu Abdurrahman, says another. Khalid was killed for the sake of God and died a martyr, God willing. So come on and watch out. The enemy is coming. And then an anthem begins.
واصدحي بالنسيم.
This particular tape, it sounds like one of the bits of tape maybe they would be playing at an Al-Qaeda training camp or something like that.
Well, I think that to some extent these are the kind of thing that would have been, you know, at an Al-Qaeda training camp. Certainly they were in bin Laden's house. They're also the kind of thing one can find, you know, in many cassette shops across the Middle East.
Really? You would find those readily available?
Anthems about martyrdom, yes. This studio-produced machine gun fire, that's more of a militant kind of tape.
I'm wondering what these recordings have been telling you about how members of Al-Qaeda see themselves and their purpose.
Many of these tapes suggest that at the time leading up to 9/11, there was considerable debate about what the aims of the militancy movement were in Kandahar, who was in charge. There are different visions, there are different discussions about whether the enemy is in fact local Arab leaders, whether it's the United States, whether it's Christians and Jews worldwide. So these audio tapes document that struggle for self-identity. And in that sense, they're very useful for us, both to pick apart the fragmentations and fractures within the movement at the time, but also to understand how there was a vision to overcome those fractions.
Do you think that there's something of value here at this point now for the U.S. intelligence community to listen to these tapes again? Not so much maybe to get intelligence information, but to get into the minds of who these individuals are, the way they think.
I think there's a lot of value for that kind of project. I think the complexity of these tapes has to be approached beyond psychology and the mind of bin Laden in particular. It's got to be situated in the culture, in history. What I think is the value of these cassettes is seeing these jihadis in everyday context, it's seeing how they take these broader themes of struggle and violence and situate them in relation to people's daily lives. And I think that's the kind of thing that these tapes help us understand better.
Flag Miller is a professor of religious studies at the University of California, Davis, and he's working on a book about the bin Laden tapes. Thank you, Flag.
Great to talk.